Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It's time to step into the tippy zone where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, to step into your power, and to connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein, and I am dedicated to explore a life that is lived with clarity, confidence, control, and with awareness. And that is my goal for Tippy Talk. But even more than that, it's my personal goal, and it has been for a very long time. And so before we start today, which we will be talking about the awakening, a spiritual awakening, and the process of how that works. Do you want to awaken? And if you do, do you understand the process? And what really is it? But before we start, I'm going to give you a little bit of news, a little bit of business about Tippy Talk. We will now air once a week on Mondays at 5 o'clock Eastern Time instead of twice a week, which was on Mondays and Wednesdays. We will air once a week because we will be recording other shows throughout the week, and they will be archived. But if you want to catch us live on the air and you want to talk to us, it's going to be on Mondays at 5 o'clock. And the other shows will be broadcast, they will be archived, and we will have lots of goodies, and we'll have a lot of new shows. And that's the big news for Tippy Talk. You are listening to Tippy Feldenstein on Tippy Talk. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself today and why we're talking about the awakening. And one of the things that I take pride in, and one of the things that I'm very, very careful about, is that I never tell anyone to do anything that I have not done. I don't talk about things that I have not experienced as if I know what I'm talking about. I do talk about things that I've read that other people experience, but if I talk about something with confidence that I experienced, that's where I will stand. It's the things that I have felt with my own blood, with my own sweat, and in my own bones that's the stuff I usually talk about. But even more than that, I've learned to bite my tongue. And that means that I don't give advice anymore, which I used to someone who's not seeking advice from me. And that was one of the hardest lessons I had to learn, because I have an urge to give advice, especially when I see someone that has a problem that I know I can help. I used to think that everyone was like me, and they always have that sense that they want to help, that they want to solve problems, that they're drawn towards solving the problem. But I found out that it isn't like that. And so the hardest thing to do is not to give advice when you're not asked for it and that there's no interest in getting it. And so today I woke up, kind of felt like I was waking up from a slumber. I felt like I was inside of a hole and just not even trying to get out, just enjoying being inside the hole. And I can't really say that it was enjoying. It might have been a little bit of fun, but it was also hard, because when you're in a place that you're not breathing and you're not doing anything productive and you just feel closed in, and you try to enjoy being there, which is kind of a dichotomy that does happen, you're still in the hole. And so I asked for help. I asked to be pulled up out of the hole. And then I looked a little bit around for some kind of advice. And the first thing that I opened up was a page from the book, How Successful People Think, and that Annie had sent me. And I had looked at it before, but this morning it actually spoke to me. Do you have a time when you look at things and then you look at it again and you see it every day, but all of a sudden one day you look at it and it says something important to you? That's part of your awakening, and that's what we will talk about, what the awakening really, how it unfolds. But here is what I read from How Successful People Think. He says here on page 97 that some people naturally participate in what he calls shared thinking. So anytime they see a problem, they think, who do I know who can help with this? In other words, they try to begin to solve that problem. Leaders tend to be that way. So do extroverts. However, you don't have to be either of those to benefit from shared thinking. And then he gives you the following steps to help you improve your ability to harness shared thinking. So he's talking about shared thinking. What hit me about this is that anytime you see a problem, they think, who do I know who can help with this? And with me, it's always been, ever since I was in first grade, anytime I see a problem, I think, who do I know, of course, can help with it? But I also think, how can I help? What do I know that could be helpful to this? I start looking for solutions. And it becomes very important for me, especially if I see somebody in pain and I know that the solution is going to get them out of pain. I'm going to give you all the ideas that we have here on how to harness it, because those are important ideas. But before we do that, there was something else that I saw this morning and that I listened to this morning that I've had sitting on my desktop and the computer for a while, and I did not want to listen to it. Now, I didn't want to listen to it for a reason. I wanted to listen to it, but something stopped me. And something stopped me because of my personal story. Something that I'm going to tell you that I don't talk about that much, but I am going to talk about it today. And it has to do with my background and where I come from, a Jewish family who call themselves the Frum. The Frum is a community of Jews that are, I guess some people call them ultra-Orthodox, although I don't see it that way. Obviously, I come from the community. I see it a lot differently. Some people call them religious. Some people call them other things that I'm sure I don't know about. But it's a very strict and orthodox community called the Fring. Because of my upbringing with this community, and which is really a very closed, very sheltered community, to me, I kind of see it now like a cult, even though a cult has negative connotation, like they do evil things. This community does not necessarily do evil things. I mean, there are good people in the community. There are bad people, just like any other community. Their orthodoxy does not make them better or worse than anybody else. But the cult element of the people that are inside this community do not allow anyone else in very easily and do not allow anyone out very easily. It's a very closed cult-like environment where you can't get in and you can't get out, because if you're in and you're born into it, like I was, getting out of this community is a lot more painful than labor pains. For me, it was not because I wanted to get out, because of the circumstances of my life and my personal life story, which I'm not going to go into right now. It was a very painful experience for a lot of years. And so even though I love a lot of Fulham people, some of them are wonderful, and some, like I said, some of them are worse than the devil. Like my mother married a man who was our personal Hitler and our personal torturer, and he was also Fulham, and he was the one that actually started the process of me leaving this community. But so even though there are a lot of people still in the Fulham community that I like, and a lot of people in the community that I love, there are some very precious people, I don't like their way of life. It kind of makes me nauseous. Anything that reminds me of that way of life, or anything that makes, anything that has to do with it, because of my personal story, because of my pain. And so this thing that was sitting on my desktop that I wanted to hear about, because it was about the awakening, which I'm going to tell you about, was from a woman named Shifra and a rabbi, David Katz, who are both part of the Fulham. I think they are. I thought they were before I listened to them. And of course, I know they are now. Not every rabbi is a Fulham rabbi. Not every person that claims to be religious is part of the Fulham. But this woman looked like she was part of the Fulham. She is wearing a wig, definitely is, and also the way she spoke and the way he spoke, it sounded like he's a very, as he she called it, observant, but I would say ultra fanatic. Definitely they are. So I didn't really want to hear it, but I wanted to hear what they had to say, so it's been sitting there. So this morning I heard it, and it was amazing. It was an amazing insight of an awakening. Like I said, this is an amazing person that happens to be one of the Fulham. Lots of amazing people there. I think it's even more personal to me. This guy's rabbi, his name is David Katz, which was my sister's husband that passed away last year. And this Sunday will be 1 year. And he was very, very young. And it's a very dramatic family experience. And he's also part of the Fulham community. But he was one of those amazing people, and his name was David Katz. So when I saw that, it kind of felt like David was sending me a message from beyond, but then I thought I was crazy. And so when I once I described the awakening, you'll see why maybe I was crazy, but maybe it wasn't so crazy. And so as far as Judaism is concerned, it has two elements. One is the draconian rites and rituals, which are, one of those rites would be for women to wear a wig, the way the dress code, their rituals. That's a draconian part of Judaism, which gives me a really bad feeling. But there's also this spiritual part of Judaism. Of course, people focus on the draconian, and I'm giving you now part of what this rabbi was talking about, which makes a lot of sense. People focus on the draconian, which is the part that appalled me, that made my life miserable, and that eventually pushed me out of this society, of this world. But the spiritual part of Judaism, and Judaism itself, is not just for Jews. It's for the whole world. It's wisdom that was given to this planet, to humanity, to incorporate and to be able to advance each and every human being living on this planet to be able to become a spiritual, enlightened, awakened being. And that's what this guy actually said, which is really amazing because I had never heard anyone in that from community say that, but I knew it was true. Because when I left that community, one of the things I never left was the knowledge, the connection that I had to God, which just because I wasn't Frum anymore does not mean that I didn't believe in God. Like I always say, God does not belong to religion. God belongs to humanity. And that's one of the things that this Rabbi David Katz said, was that this is for humanity. And I love that because I've known that it was true, but I just didn't know how to verbalize it. What I wanted to talk to you about today was the awakening, because I know that that's my passion, and I know that everybody that's listening is either awake, either awakening, either enlightened, or living a life of the awake state, which are the states of awakening. So I want to give you the states of what happens. And so the first step is called the spiritual awakening. The first step for the spiritual awakening is called the awakening. And the awakening is, and now I'm quoting everything that the rabbi said, which is amazing. So I couldn't change it even if I wanted to, because he said it so perfectly. The awakening is any experience that changes your perspective to what it was. So it changes your perspective enough so that you really just can't go back to your everyday life of the way you did things before. And it could be a huge spiritual awakening that happened. It could be a huge thing. Like for me, my car crashed. I almost died. That was one. Living life from the Frum world into the rest of the world, that was a huge awakening. And I had a lot of awakening experiences, and a lot of people do, can have a lot of awakening experience. And he said it could also be a very small experience, like discovering that butter and bread go good together, which I've known all my life, but some people have never tried it. It could be eating a dumpling for the first time in your life, and now that changes you. So it could be any kind of an awakening. But that's basically a gift from the divine to you. And it comes in a way that your destiny is to receive it. And basically, the more you press the envelope, the more of an awakening you will get. So for me, pressing the envelope of my Frum world, for example, a huge thing for me to do is to wear my dress above my knee. That was such a huge rebellion. Whereas for somebody else, there may be nothing. But for wearing my dress above my knee, the consequences for that were so big and so life-changing. Getting kicked out of school, getting abused by my mother's monster husband, whose name is Monster Frider. And so I pushed the envelope, and that catapulted into a life-changing that ultimately saved me from the life of the Frum. So that's the first stage. The first stage is the awakening, and the awakening depends on how far you push the envelope of wherever you are right now. And then comes the enlightenment. And when you live in the enlightened state, you realize and you say, like, this was so amazing, but not me. So basically, you're tuned into a radar where you're picking up all those things, like, sometimes you may be picking up a quote by someone that may be amazing. You realize that you have a spirit. You begin to see things that people do that might be great. So your life is basically mundane, boring, every day. You may not even feel enlightened. And once in a while, you see something that you pick up on the radar, like, wow, that was amazing. Or somebody sends you an inspirational thing and you say, wow, that was so inspirational. But you always keep thinking that it's not you, that you're not the wisdom, that you don't have it, that you have to get it from somewhere outside of yourself. And the thing is that you can get stuck here for a really long time, or you can even get stuck here forever. And you have no right to tell people it's not them, because the fact is that once you go to the next phase, which is the awake state, which is the state of being constantly awake, and you recognize that the enlightenment is everywhere, and you recognize that enlightenment is in everything, and that we are all one, and it does not exclude you. And it doesn't even exclude people who don't know that they are enlightened, because they too are enlightened. So when you can hear and you can listen from anyone and everything, and you can see the wisdom and you can hear the wisdom come from a rock or from a tree or from a bird or from another person or from a voice of heaven, that's the enlightenment state. And that's when you're awake all the time. You're awake 24/7. That's the three steps. And that's why no matter, you realize that you have no right to tell anyone it's not you, because it is them. Even if they don't know it, even if they don't understand it, they still are the enlightenment. And so when you crack the surface, it's not, may not always be pleasant. But when the light comes through in a healthy way, it's always a beautiful experience. Because the more you discover, the more you will want to discover. So if you discover with a little faith, a little crack of the surface, you find a little bit of light. And if you discover more, you find more. But ultimately, the reason that you go through that is because when you become an awake person, the awake people, what they need to do, they need to help other people become awake. And that means that they need to guide other people to properly guide, great, to build an infrastructure that will put one person after another person, just keep on lighting it, keep on putting the light on everywhere. And the advice that we get from all that is for you personally. Basically, in a few words, the advice is, yes, you can do whatever it is that you set out to do. If you have a question to ask, you can ask the question. If you have a car to drive, you can drive your car. You can do it, and the fact is, just do it. And another secret, a big secret from this, is the Judaism is a universal system. It's not for Jews only. So basically, be bold and embrace the journey. That's the bottom line, because you have divinity within yourself to be bold and to embrace that experience. And that is what took me a few steps out of the hole that I was in this morning. And I say a few steps because I don't feel that I'm yet out of the hole, but I feel that I may, hopefully by the end of this week, be completely out of the hole. And I hope that you can join me and help me complete my climbing out of the hole. And so, yes, you are listening to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein, and I'm going to go to the other thing that I promised you that I was going to talk about, which is a few ways, a few steps that you can improve your ability to participate in the shared thinking, which is really what the successful people always do. So the first one is to value the ideas of other people. So you have to believe that the ideas of other people have value. Because if you don't, your hands are tied. How do you know if you truly want input from others is by asking yourself a few questions. Am I emotionally secure? Because people who don't have confidence and worry about their status and their position or their power, they tend to always reject ideas of others. They protect their turf and they keep their people at bay. It takes a very secure person to consider other people's ideas. Many years ago, emotionally insecure people took a key position on the board of directors. And after a couple of meetings, it became obvious to the other board members this individual will not positively contribute to the organization. And so if you ask, why does this person always do and say things that hinder the progress? The answer you will get is hurting people hurt people. So that's the first question you have to ask yourself. Am I emotionally secure? Or am I hurting? And will I be hurting other people because I'm hurting? The other thing is, do I place value on people? You won't value the ideas of a person if you don't value and respect the person himself. So if you consider your conduct around people that you value, take a look at how you act around people you don't value. And here's the difference. And another thing I want to tell you, when I say value and respect person himself, or if I use he or him, that is including him and her, that is including male and female, that is generic for male and female, and that is the proper way that always was before our society became politically correct, which I am not. So if I say value and respect the person himself, that's including a person, a man or a female, any person. So if you value a person, you would say, I want to spend time with them. If you don't value, you would say, I don't want to be around them. That's how you know you value them. If you value them, you would say, I listen to them. If you don't, I neglect to listen. If you value, you'd say, I want to help them. If you don't, I don't offer them help. If you value, you say, I'm influenced by them. And if you don't, you ignore them. If you value them, you respect them. If you don't, you're indifferent. That's how you can tell if you value them people. Another question you can ask yourself is, do I value the interactive process, which is the process of interaction, obviously. Let's see if there's another question you can ask. You can ask number two, is you move from competition to cooperation. And so instead of seeing everybody else as competition, you see everyone else as potentially cooperating and contributing. That's a huge move. That's a huge, huge move for everyone, because when you see everyone as a competitor or as an enemy, it's very difficult to move forward. Jeffrey J. Fox, author of How to Become CEO, says, always be on the lookout for ideas. Be completely indiscriminate as to the source. Get the ideas from customers, children, competitors, and other industries or cab drivers. It doesn't matter who thought of an idea, because the idea may come from somebody, even a dog. And a person who values cooperation, he desires to complete the ideas of others, not to compete with them. If someone asks you to share ideas, focus on helping the team, not getting ahead personally. If you are the one who brings people together to share their thoughts, praise the idea more than the source of the idea. If the best idea always wins rather than the person who offers it, then all will share their thoughts with greater enthusiasm. So sharing ideas and respecting other people's ideas. It's another great thing to think about. And number three is, when you meet, have an agenda. You meet with people, have an agenda of exactly what you're going to do. Don't improvise. Number four, get the right people around you. Get the right people around the table. Get the people who appreciate the strength of others. Get the people who understand their place of value. Get people who place what is best for the team before themselves. Be around people who can bring out the best thinking in people around them. Be around people who possess maturity, experience, and success. Be around people who will take ownership and responsibility for decisions. Be around people who will leave the table with a we attitude, not a me attitude. That is the people that will help you be more successful, more enlightened, and more awakened, no matter what you do. One of the things that he says here that I think is important is that we choose a lot of people to brainstorm based on how we feel about them, our friendships, our circumstances, convenience, but that doesn't help us to discover, to create the ideas of the highest order. Who we invite to the table does make a big difference. And number five, compensate good thinkers and collaborators well. So if somebody is a good thinker and a collaborator, definitely compensate them. And here's a thinking question for today. A question you can ask yourself. Am I consistently including the heads of others to think over my head and achieve compounding results? That's the question of the day. And that's the broadcast for today. So go ahead and crack the surface. Go ahead and think about what part of the awakening you stand in. No matter what part you are, no matter where you stand, be bold, embrace the journey. Be strong, crack the surface, push the envelope. Go outside of your personal comfort zone because you have the ability inside of you to shine and to make a huge difference in one person's life, in one village life, or maybe on the entire planet. So think positive. And when you're in a hole like I am right now, you really want to delve into the negative. You really want to just let go. Ask someone to help. I think that was the first step that actually got me going. It doesn't matter what that person will do, if they will help or not. As long as they're there for you and they're willing to listen to you asking for help, ask for it. Because the next step will come naturally. And that is what my lesson was for today. And now we've come to the end of our time together here on Tippy Talk. It has been wonderful chatting with you. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to hearing your feedback. And thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Tippy Talk with me, Tippy Feldenstein. We bid you a magical journey and let your talent be your potion. My name is Tippy Feldenstein.
I know you're busy for lunch, taking pictures of your coffee.
Yes, that was Newborn Music, the official music for Tippy Hop. Vocalist is Alan James, and if you want to hear more of Newborn's music, you can go to newborn.com. And I'm going to do a little bit of an experiment here with my microphone so that I can see if there is a lot of things here that I left out that I have not done yet. And for that, I'm going to play a little bit of music and see how it comes up. And I like it, so we'll see how that works. And I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm going to put on some shamanic music for you to relax and to think about everything that we talked about today. Have a magical day.